What's up, everybody? Welcome to a very special edition of the Nine Circles podcast, that thing that you thought was dead but may actually still exist. I don't know. We'll have to see where this takes us. I'm your host, Dan Kaplan, and you may recall I used to do this thing with Corey Butterworth, but this particular edition we are doing, I'm just doing solo, and I wanted to bring it to you because I had a very awesome conversation with a band that is very, very big to all of us in the Nine Circles family. We love these guys. The band is Vatnet, formerly known as Vatnet Viskar, and the conversation was with guitarist, songwriter Chris Alfieri, who we've known for a couple years now. Just awesome dude, awesome. Everyone in the band are really cool dudes, but Chris has kind of been, you know, the public face of the band through social media, Instagram, Twitter, things like that. And he was very kind and generous enough with his time to just hop on the pod and you know, give us the little preview of what they've been working on. You know, it's been a turbulent year for Vatnet. You know, founding member vocalist Nick Thornbury left the band last year, and they've been sort of working on new material ever since then. And you know, rumblings of you know, stuff emerging later this year. And Chris just offered to come on and talk to us about it. And so we did that. But we also talked about so much more. We talked about the metal world in general, the metal community in general, and bands that have gotten attention lately for the wrong reasons in the metal community, but that we still happen to respect and like what they're doing and things like that. And it got deep. It really, you know, it goes so far beyond that. This was more than an hour conversation, and it was fantastic throughout. I am going to just stop talking now and bring it to you because it was really cool. We jump into the conversation. I am talking to Chris about their last tour they did with Nick, which was a trek around the country with Take and Youngin' in the Way last early winter, I guess, like February, late winter, early part of the year. Yeah, that. And so without any further ado, let's jump into it there. Here is my conversation with Chris Alfieri. I remember that show being just so awesome. And it was, you know, it's a distillation of like everything that we have enjoyed about you guys as a live entity and stuff like that. And we were so amped on it. And it was our friend Kevin's first time seeing you guys. So he was amped on it. And then, you know, not that long after that, we got the news, that Nick had left the band. And, you know, I don't know how comfortable you guys are talking about it, or you know, if it's personal stuff, but I just I'm just curious to hear a little more about that, if you know, if possible.
Yeah, I mean, we it's hard to be in a band, as you know, for many different reasons. Just like it's hard to do anything in life once you kind of hunker down and get into what you're doing. I think that you know, the people that you surround yourself with, no matter who they are, you kind of all just like form a family unit. And with that family unit comes, you know, that freedom to kind of be yourself. And, you know, each of us see each other in our best and worst. And I think that we toured so much and it all took so much out of each of us, but in different ways. And I think, you know, with Nick, I think that it just all got, you know, probably just to be like, okay, man, like this is enough for me right now. And that's fine. You know, we have no personal issues within the band. There's no, you know, there was no fighting, nothing like that. You know, even like when he left, it was just kind of like, all right, well, you know, we'll just keep doing what we do. There was, you know, only a few minutes, I think, of whether or not we go on after that. But we're not really dwellers either. So it's kind of, it feels like that was a year ago. So to me, that feels like forever ago, which is so strange to think about, you know. Yeah. But then to have people that don't even know that yet, because we haven't even like put that on our Facebook or done anything like that.
I think
just so strange.
I think Metal Archives actually, until recently, and they may still list him as a member of the band. It's like,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And I think that's, yeah, I think just, we haven't really officially announced it. So this would be official announcement, that Nick left. And, you know, for a minute there, we just thought about like, what do we do now? For me, it was hard. You know, obviously you lose a vocalist in any band and you want to, you know, you don't want to, I don't know. It's hard to say because losing a vocalist is hard because like sometimes it kills a band and other times it totally either, you know, it can make a band better, or just, you know, make a band excel at a different level, like the Dillinger Escape Plan. Mm-hmm. What Dimitri brought to Calculating Infinity was incredible. But with him leaving and then them getting Greg, it's like they go on this other trajectory that you could have never foreseen.
Right.
But then you look at other bands that go through singers left and right, and it's just kind of, in my opinion, it somewhat demeans the music. You know, I've got that classic opinion of the band's singer is not really the leader, but he's the constant. He's the guy that's, you know, everything else revolves around what that constant voice is happening.
Right.
So for me, it was like, okay, well, if we're going to forge on, we need to find somebody else who's as dedicated to what we do and, you know, all the other stuff that you think about, as far as being able to sit in a van with somebody for, you know, 4 to 13 hours or 19 hours a day. Mm-hmm. So we knew this whole time that Casey could sing, but not, Casey doesn't scream like Nick and doesn't really scream. He sings. He's like a very good, great singer. And we knew that even had Nick stayed in the band, the direction of the band was going to change dramatically anyways. So we kind of just saw that, you know, those two things and put them together and said, you know, let's just kind of go on and write another record that doesn't sound anything like the last two and kind of see what happens.
There you go.
So that's the formula.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I had talked to him briefly because I think I mentioned to you when we emailed that I caught up with both him and Seamus at the Astronaut Show when they came down here to Lancaster. They played.
Yeah.
And
yeah. You know, I think great.
Yeah. Oh my God. So much fun. Them and Moontooth, like the two of them bill was just like, holy shit. Yeah.
That's like, you just want to drink beers outside that show. Like, cause you're underage and you can't get in, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like just like old school fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I was talking to them and, you know, he obviously didn't want to go into specifics because I know it was still, you know, you guys are still working on it. And he just said it's the folks that like what we're about, which is, you know, not necessarily being tied to any one style, not necessarily pigeonholing ourselves into any one group, any one genre or sound or whatever, but just kind of like pulling from a whole bunch of different things and amalgamating them into one sound.
Yeah.
Like the folks that like you for that reason will like this record because, you know, even though, you know, the vocalist may have changed and the vocal style may have changed, that's still what you're doing.
Yeah. It's still an amalgamation of everything we listen to. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's in a lot of it comes out of, me personally, at least a lot of it comes out of, you know, I guess how I feel at the time. I'm not one to talk about what's bothering me. So I think a lot of the times it comes out through my hands, through my guitar. So some days it's frantic and kind of frenzied and you kind of get the parts that we've had in the past that are just, you know, the black metal parts. Mm-hmm. But then other times or weeks you kind of get the, you know, I write differently, but it's always stuff that I kind of just don't use for VatNet or haven't used for the past. So for this record, even on this record, it ranges from, you know, even BPM wise, it ranges dramatically from song to song. Mm-hmm. So, which for us, that's even been something that hasn't happened in the past, where we've been kind of dynamic in the sounds that we make and then take out and add more to and blah, blah, blah throughout one song. We've always had a steady BPM that we've always kind of stuck with. Whereas this record, there's, you know, there's a lot more just kind of messing around with that type of stuff. But I don't know, for us, it's just always about not being pigeonholed and not, you know, not really writing for something. I guess writing how we feel at the time, you know, as I said before, it's kind of just like, you listen to something, and I listen to a record and I remember exactly where I was the first time I heard that record, you know, and there's a few of them for me. And, even playing some of our songs live, I'll remember like, oh shit, remember that day? Like, ooh, that sucks. Or, you know, oh shit, I remember that day. That's great. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting. So
yeah,
that's, I'd rather be honest, with what we present, musically than keep, you know, people happy, with, you know, continuously giving them what they want, I guess.
Right. Well, and I feel like that's the kind of thing that can, you know, I mean, it'll really show through in your music. You know, if you're forcing something to, you know, to appease a certain group of fans, like whether you're like, whether it's something that you're conscious of or not, like they'll be able to hear that in the music.
Yeah. Yeah. You can hear, like, I've just heard bands do covers of, you know, songs that aren't metal. And mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, they definitely forced that blast beat in the end there. Like, it's right. just like, it's like, come on, you know, you don't have to do that. And I had this conversation the other day about things that are metal and what's metal and all this other stuff. And I had this idea that, you know, we have this idea of heavy metal, and then metal broke off from heavy metal because heavy metal would be, like, my opinion, like Manowar, that type of metal.
Right.
And then metal broken off from that, metal would be, I don't know, that all the genres that break off and then go to metalcore and all the other stuff.
Right.
But there's also heavy, and people often confuse heavy music with metal. And I think that it's hard still nowadays to make heavy music that people won't get and will confuse with metal, and then will review it through the metal scope, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm finding, like, the new Paul Bearer, I'm finding that it's getting hard for people to understand that it's not a metal record. It's
right.
a heavy record. You know what I mean? And people are kind of like, ah, this is, where's the metal? And, or thinking it's a metal thing and it's not delivering on that. I just, you know, it's, that's where we're at. It's like, we use metal tones on this record a ton. Like, the guitars are just, you know, my Mesa dual rectifier. So it's like, we're using metal tones, but the songs aren't, they're not metal.
Right.
And it's, we're, like we said earlier, do you want to appease a certain amount of people? No, I mean, yes, but absolutely not at the same time. It's like a fine line you walk because,
right.
you know, once you establish anything, it's like, well, I want to give, you know, like Nine Circles, you guys, like, I want to give our readers something that they like while also branching out to somebody new that hasn't read us yet. And
right.
that, you know, and it's like that fine line you walk. So with this record, we just went balls out and we basically made everything I just said useless. And we just decided to do everything we ever wanted to do.
That's awesome.
And that's basically what the record's about.
Nice.
It's not at all about, the record's not about doing whatever you want at all, but that's what it should be about.
Right. So where do we stand with the record? Is it finished? Is it, you know, going to be, you know, like what kind of timeline are we looking at?
So we got a master today. So that's a good thing.
Okay.
Great. So we'll probably, I mean, I would say you'll probably hear a song. I would say by summer. I would give you that time frame.
Cool.
So definitely, I think the record will be out by the end of the year, but it's done, and the art's done, and the ball will be rolling very soon. So that's good.
Awesome.
For sure.
Do we have a title yet, or does that have to stay under wraps for now?
No, you know what? I'm going to give you this. It's going to be self-titled.
Okay.
So that doesn't really give you much.
All right.
But what we mean by that is this is it. This is what we are. You know, and if you're not on board for the roller coaster of Vetnet, then get off,
yeah.
I guess, because it's going to go up and down.
Excellent, excellent. Well, dude, I'm, you know, I mean, this, you all know how we felt about Settler over at Nine Circles. I mean, we love that thing. Any rumblings of you guys working on stuff, you guys doing stuff. You know, I remember like when you guys posted that Casey was going to be the new vocalist, I was like, holy shit, that's awesome. You know, blah, blah, blah. So we're chomping at the bit. And I'm like super stoked to hear, you know, just what you guys have moved on to, like what the new VatNet is all about. It's exciting.
It is over here too, because we've been working on this for so long, man.
Yeah.
So we got off that Taka tour with Youngin in the Way, which was one of the best tours we've ever done. I'm not gonna lie to you, that was so much fun. And like you said, you went to the show in Brighton, which was the first night, and I mean that tour package, we all had great vibes. Host was the nicest host he could ever be.
Well, I was gonna ask, what's he like in person?
He's super nice.
Really?
He's like extremely nice. He's very intense, just, you know, he talks to you very close, but normal, like, you know, it's not like you're talking to a demon or anything like that. Like, right. He's a normal individual and he's just a very, very gentle guy. Like, he's just super nice.
That's awesome.
And they all were. There was multiple times where me and guys with them were talking about Bruce Springsteen for hours on end.
Oh man.
So those dudes were, you know, they were great and good to tour with and always made sure we were taken care of. And Youngin in the Way was also super nice. So we got off that tour and then Nick quit. So it's like, you go from, holy shit, that was the best tour ever, to, oh God, what do we do now? So we just decide to immediately start writing songs. And then that basically became what the new VatNet is.
Right.
But that's a year. So for me and for what we've done in the past, like in the past, we basically put out a record almost a year or been in recording mode within a year and a half of each record. So to kind of sit on something or sit with stuff for a year, for me, it's like, holy crap, I got to get this stuff out.
Cause you like, want to start playing it. You want to start.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to start doing something, you know, yeah. You're just kind of like, your musically, I'm kind of just rotting away, which sucks, but there's nothing else you can do but wait sometimes.
Yeah,
because, you know, it'll strike when the time is right, as they say.
Exactly. Well, and I know the other guys have been busy too, you know, like with you know, Casey doing Astronoid and Seamus doing Vanna and also Astronoid, and you know, it's just,
yeah. And Seamus, God rest Seamus' soul, like that dude's been drumming his ass off for like 7 or 8 months straight. I think he was on tour, or he was home for like 2 months out of 10 months or something last year. And it was absolutely insane for him to do all that. And I kind of, it's like, I have somewhat of an age gap on the kid. I have like a 12-year age gap on him.
Oh, wow.
So I kind of think of him as my son, even though I would be the worst father to him. But I saw him grow up in that last year or two so much. It's so strange to watch like your little band member grow up.
Yeah.
And now he has his own apartment and stuff. So when you see him, like when we're touring and you see him out there, congratulate him because he's been working hard.
Yeah.
And he has a great, awesome, screen printing company called Union Screen Printing as well. If anybody needs their screen printing done,
awesome.
hit up Union. That's Seamus.
Very
just so
cool.
You know.
Very
throw
cool.
a free plug in there.
Yeah, of course.
But the Astronoid stuff is amazing. That record is absolutely incredible. And Brett and Casey and Dan and those dudes worked again on that record for a good long while. Like they probably took, I think, 9 months to a year on that one as well.
Oh wow.
So, I mean, I'm not going to say this record is as good as Astronoid because, you know, I don't know, but if you like the Astronoid record, I do think that you'll like the new VatNet record.
Very cool.
For different takes. Although there's only one blast beat on the new VatNet record.
Oh,
so,
man.
So for anybody hoping that, you know, it's going to be a shred fest in that way, it is not.
Well, that was going to be one of my next questions was, you know, obviously we've talked about the stylistic evolution and things like that. And, without spoiling, you know, sonically, if you could draw any comparisons, like I'm sitting here racking my brain, you know, based on what you've told me, what Casey and Seamus told me at the show, like what is this going to sound like? Like, I know you guys did the Disintegration t-shirt promo. Like, are we going to hear some stuff on there that sounds like The Cure or like,
what are we doing here? It's weird because I think every band says, you know, no band on earth sounds like us, blah, blah, blah. And I do think that there's definitely bands out there that sound like us probably, and we sound like them and vice versa, however you want to say it. But I think it sonically, speaking, when we put out Settler, a lot of people gave us feedback that they thought that it sounded like crap. And I think in comparison to Sky Swallower, it definitely sounded different, but it was definitely what we wanted. Mm-hmm. And again, I think people confuse production with not being a part of what the feel of the record is trying to evoke. Like, I love Injustice for All for all the wrong reasons. I love that the production sounds like it's in a garbage tin can. I love that those dudes were in the super morning tin, you know, process,
right,
and that they produced something as dry and bleak as that. So for Settler, we went for that. And I think people didn't get it. And I'm not sure if they're capable of getting stuff like that currently as an audience as a whole. Mm-hmm. This record, we just basically went balls out. It sounds sonically like Sky Swallower. We're all huge fans of Devin Townsend and anything he produces. And I'm not going to tell you that this sounds like Infinity or anything like that, but it definitely has that production, that big production, that Sky Swallower had, mostly because it's a bigger sound. We put out the Cure shirt mostly because, as a joke, because Nick quit and nobody knew yet. And it said Disintegrating. So it's just kind of like, we're kind of disintegrating in a lot of ways.
Right.
And it does have a lot of Cure type of parts on it. There's a lot of messing with tones. Uh-huh. It's a lot of it is the amalgamation of our influences, but through tones, not necessarily through the notes we're playing. So which I think is more fun to do. But I mean, there's one song on there that's just a standard pop song. And there's guitar solos like out the ass. It's what we wanted to do. There's tons of guitar harmonies. It's just fun. It's just a fun record to listen to. I think, but what Casey covers through his lyrics, I think it's going to reach a different listener that we really weren't talking to before. So
nice.
I think that's a more honest representation of who we are as people, lyrically as well. So that's a good thing.
Well, hey, onward and upward, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I mean, you know, like, it's, you know, it just goes back to just being honest, being true to yourselves. And
yeah,
that's going to take you places. People are going to be able to hear that, you know, regardless of the style. So
yeah,
like, very cool.
And you, as long as you hit them early with stylistic changes throughout the records, I think that they're fine with it. You know, I look at a band like Boris and that band can do whatever they want, and they're, you know, they're allowed to, not for any other reason than because they do. And I think Vatnet can be any type of band it wants to be. And if we ever return to black metal, we'll return to black metal. And, you know, that's just kind of how it goes.
Yeah.
But the stylistic change came a lot out of me not listening to metal and not really associating myself with it as a scene much anymore. It was getting tired to show up to shows and feel, I guess, like we were like strange in some way. Mm-hmm. Like we played Maryland Death Fest,
Yeah.
And it just, I always felt like I had to toughen up more to be like, you know, to get that credibility, you know, even though I'd been listening to this shit since I was like 14 or 12.
Well, that's just it. It's such a status oriented genre.
Like it really is. And it's so strange to me, because we all come from getting rejected at some point from some scene we got rejected from and we found metal.
Right.
Not a lot of us just discovered metal and we're like, oh, that's it. Sick. Yeah. You know what I mean?
What happened to like this being a genre of outcasts, of by and for outcasts?
Yeah, of course. And you're going to have subsects within the outcasts that, you know, like, oh, the goths versus the punks or whatever. But with the dawn of the internet and in the age of just like, you know, recorded harassment, it's like, Jesus Christ, you know, how I get that we're all outcasts, but we don't really need to argue with each other. And we definitely don't need to like just pull coals at each other and just find faults, you know?
Yeah.
It's, I don't know, but that's in any scene. But I just found with metal and then with the specific subsect of black metal, which of course that's the one I land in that I love the most, you know, they're not going to accept no matter how hard and long we try. They would never accept us as a legitimate, credible black metal band.
Right.
So nor did we want to be but it's hard because you're playing both sides constantly. Mm-hmm. You know, the black metal people are saying this isn't black metal or this isn't black metal enough. And these other people are saying, oh, this sounds like black metal. I hate black metal. But it's black metal. It has blast beats, you know, or
right,
whatever. So
there are tremolo picked riffs in some songs.
so we just, it's like somebody had to, you know, like Roseanne Barr said once, like whoever says something first, whoever says something first usually gets like the most shit about it. And then like later on, people are like, oh yeah, whatever. I guess what she said was like, right. Or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. The first people that break out of a genre and go to a new one, or like try to, you know, take something from one genre and bring it into a new one are usually ridiculed in some way.
Right.
And then, you know, someone does it geniusly the way it's supposed to be done and bam, everybody's got Faith No More, say, is a perfect example. They had to exist, you know, and they were perfect at what that is. But because of it, new metal happened.
Right.
So you can't blame Faith No More for new metal, though. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I'm just rambling at this point, so I apologize.
No. I think it's great. I think it's, you know, like there aren't enough. I don't know that there are enough, especially in this age of metal on the internet, there aren't enough like tangent oriented conversations, you know, just deep explorations of shit. It's all like boiled down into your 140 character.
Oh,
musings.
Yeah. And I can't. And that's why I, you know, I'll get on the phone with somebody and I realize I talk to them for 4.5 hours and it's like, holy crap. I haven't talked to anybody in 4 days except for my wife. Like,
yeah.
Holy crap. But with metal and I love metal and I still love it and I still listen to it. But I find myself listening to more of the classics or more of the metal I grew up with. Mm-hmm. And not seeking out new metal as much as I used to. So I've kind of found myself saying, well, how do I contribute to a scene if I don't really participate in it in any way? I kind of feel I don't feel right doing that,
right.
In a lot of ways. And I don't feel like, how can I give it a credible voice and how can I, you know, provide it with something that adds to it if I'm not even listening to what others or any of my peers are currently doing, which, you know, I just think that's important. So for me, musically, it just always has to go to something new. But I just don't want people to listen to this and confuse, whoa, Chris from Vatnet shitting on metal. No way. I would never do that. Ronnie James Dio, in my opinion, is the equivalent of Jesus Christ.
Right.
And I say that as being raised Roman Catholic. So the amount of Catholic guilt in me right now for just saying that could, you know, could fill the Hoover Dam.
Well, and hey, and also a proud New Hampshireite, New Hampshirean, New Hampshireite. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was a Portsmouth boy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a Portsmouth boy. I don't know why we talk like that, but. But metal has its own issues, as you know.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think of another scene that has issues like this.
It's one of those things, like, I'm sure they're out there. And if, you know, we were as involved in like a different scene, we'd probably be saying the same thing about that scene. It's just this is the one that we are the closest to. And thus we see, you know, just acutely both the strengths and the flaws to it. You know, it's just,
yeah,
it just comes from proximity.
Yeah. It's just, it's funny. I mean, metal, I mean, when would you say metal started? Like, is Black Sabbath the first metal band?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I guess so. It's that triumvirate. It's Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple, I think, right?
Yeah, yeah. Now, Black Sabbath was reacting. They were deeper than politics. They were reacting to the wrongs they felt on a natural scale, if you know what I mean. Like, their grim surroundings,
right.
You know. As human beings, they're what they felt is as heavy, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That 80s kind of, you know, when we had Reagan, and then you had that kind of backlash of 80s metal record covers, not 80s metal in the term of Whitesnake, but like 80s, those death metal covers, or even like Megadeth covers, they just got super like, what are these dudes trying to say?
Right.
And metal had this kind of smart, I don't know, weird take on it. If it wasn't smart, it was at least strange and different.
Mm-hmm.
But now the take, what they're trying, I feel like what they're trying to do is rehash these takes on what the situation we have now, in which no takes, rehash takes can be applied. And they're trying to take these rehashed metal dudes and apply their kind of stupid takes on it, and it's not working.
Right.
And it's just kind of making metal a real laughing stock, in my opinion. And but from the inside, it's making everybody fight with each other. I just don't get it. It's just very strange to see.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Well, I wasn't going to say anything. It was stupid.
Talking about that, it makes me think of this piece I read recently. I think it was Doug Moore over at Stereo Gum, talking about the Marduk controversy and how they had their shtick, like Panzer Division Marduk and stuff like that, and the whole German war themed element, which,
yeah,
you know, back in the late 90s and the early aughts and stuff like that, just didn't seem, you know, it was easier to laugh off and just, you know, be whatever toward, because it didn't seem like it was this, it wasn't as pressing an issue. And then you see it today and the world's changed, and yet it seems like the bands are not. And they're still going with these takes and these angles and stuff. And it's just people's reactions are changing, you know, for better or worse. People's reactions are, it's not as easy to just shrug something off, because it feels so much closer to home. It feels so much more relevant, you know.
It does. And the Marduk comparison is kind of a great, well, not kind of a great one, but it's very accurate. Because what I find these artists are doing is kind of like, you know, the day after the Columbine massacre, it was like two or three days the NRA was supposed to have some convention or something like that, near there or in the same state, I can't remember, and I don't think they canceled it. And basically that's the equivalent of the NRA coming in at kind of the wrong time and saying what they're saying, or trying to like kind of, you know, poke the bear, if you will. I mean, because that's all these kind of bands are doing in a lot of ways, is they kind of just be like, well, we used to like poke the bear and laugh it off, but I mean, eventually, like, the bear is going to get really angry if you just keep poking at it and keep poking at it.
Right.
And I think that's what you're seeing now is, you know, you have these situations which seem innocuous, which seem like, oh, well, these dudes are just kind of grabbing German imagery and playing with blast beats that are, like, very obviously, like, not human. So, I mean...
You know, like
in any other circumstance, you could laugh it off, but like, did these dudes have to come and tour America right now? Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
just pick your at the very least, like, besides going into a diatribe, just pick a different time to come here. Like, that's all, you know, like, at the very least, make a better business decision. Like,
right.
Your band is a business. Marduk, unfortunately, guys, I hate to tell it, break the fifth wall here. There is a Marduk LLC. It does exist, and there is a business behind them, and there's somebody that makes business decisions for them. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so somebody should just be like, yo, America's, like, not the best place for this shit right now. Probably not going to, like, go over too well.
Right.
But that makes you think that's what they wanted. They wanted Antifa to go in there every at some city, because what did it do? I didn't know. Hey, did you know Marduk was touring around here? Because I didn't, but now I did.
Right. And there's, you know, there, if it's not them, it's, you know, Destroyer 666 last year. It's just it's all this stuff.
Yeah. But my concern is, where does it, what's my concern always is the slippery slope, no matter what. Right now you're dealing with private citizens exercising their right to go out and show that they don't want that shit in their community.
Right.
That I back. Mm-hmm. If there was some sort of government money going to that of shutting down Marduk, I would be, like, out there picketing that shit.
Right.
Because I would be scared that one day there would be the government funded whatever coming at me. You know what I mean?
Sure.
As a band or whatever.
Right. Well, and you know, if the government does that, where do they go from there? You know, like, what's the next domino to fall? Do they start targeting all heavy music or blah blah blah? You know, it's just
or we shut down these artists, so that means we can shut down movies or something. I don't know. And I need my movies is basically what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I need my Tom Cruise every 4 years, motherfucker.
We all do. We need that escape. A mythical man that cannot age doing action movies he has no business still being so good in, you know.
Yeah.
No, at 55 it's or however old he is.
It doesn't even matter at this point. Yeah. I think what they do is they just scan their entire bodies now, and they just basically can, like, put them in the movie. They don't even have to do it. Like, I don't think Tom Cruise has actually filmed anything in 20 years. You know, they just kind of military scanned him in at some point, and now he just, like, he's like a hologram or whatever.
There you go. Hey, man. I mean, you know, CG is it's advanced. It's gotten to that point, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It kind of makes me wonder. I mean, like on that note, are you a Star Wars guy at all?
I'm not a Star Wars guy. I did see, I've seen a few of them.
Okay.
I couldn't sit here and quote with you. But I know it as a pop reference enough.
Okay.
And I did see I saw the newest, like, remake of the whatever one.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I mean, there was, you talk about, like, the Uncanny Valley, and there was an entire character that had been in the actor was an elderly man, Peter Cushing, when the first movie came out back in the 70s, and has long since passed away. And then they just recreated him for this
exactly.
new anthology movie.
Exactly.
And it's like, whoa, you know,
that could be us. That's what I mean. We're just going to live in a virtual reality where, you know, we're just recreated and all skinned it.
Everything old is new again. Everything dead is alive again. You know.
Yeah, it'll be like that Bruce Willis movie where they, like, your human body lives in a pod, and then, like, you go out, you, like, live in virtual reality. I can't remember what it was called.
What is that? I don't think I've ever saw that one.
Yeah, Bruce Willis made some weird ones in, like, the mid 2000s when he, like, you know.
Yeah.
You know, when all those big actors, they make those, like, three or four ones where you just know they made it for money.
Oh, yeah.
They print, you know, and it's okay. You're just like, Bruce, you got to get paid. I understand, my friend.
Yeah.
Times are tough. Netflix streaming and all.
Yeah. No doubt.
So, But I mean, I definitely don't want metal people to be like, yo, Chris is shitting on metal, so don't take that from me. Because, and especially you, Dan, I don't want people to think you're shitting on metal either.
No, I would never.
Very concerned. Very concerned.
Yeah. I mean, whatever, you know, if people do get that from me and they interpret this conversation as me shitting on metal, guess what? I'm not on Twitter anymore. I'm not on Facebook anymore. They can't find that shit. They can't find me.
Yeah.
I mean, they probably can.
How does that feel to free yourself of social media?
Oh,
in
dude,
a lot of ways.
So nice.
You
so
look
nice.
Great. You look really good.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm keeping the Instagram up because I like, you know, I feel like Instagram's MO is, hey, look at my nice pictures, as opposed hey, here are my takes on literally everything that crosses my feed, you know?
Yeah. It's less feedback too. It's less like, hey, yeah, I like what you did today. Great job, Dan. Good job, buddy. You know?
Yeah. And I'm just like, I thought about it and I was, you know, between, you know, the stress I had in my old career and the stress I had living in New York. And, you know, I got rid of so much of that over the last, six, eight, however many months by this point, eight months almost, which is crazy. And I just realized, you know, I was still, by being on those sites, I was still getting these triggers and I was still feeling compelled to weigh in on everything, on the hot button issues of the moment, regardless of the fact that, you know, like most of the hot button issues of the moment, like don't really have the space for my opinion. They don't require Dan's take.
Yeah. Neither mine.
Yeah. And it's like this whole democratization of communication has made everyone think that they're because their opinion can be felt, it needs to be felt. And it's like, no, you know, we can back off a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I find the, you know, and everybody has their kind of way of rationalizing why they use it so much. Obviously if you're in a band, or if you have some sort of site, you know, that you're trying to like, especially journalism based things, that's definitely something you need to be on the internet for kind of 24/7.
Sure.
And you know, if you find yourself on the internet 24/7, it's a dark place, because it just feeds your narcissism.
Right.
And it turns, like you said, it turns you into this kind of bubble around yourself. And then you don't allow in any energy or anything from the outside world, or whatever, because you're just too concerned with, you're so up to date with information that you can't even process it. So then you're trying to form these opinions. And especially with things like Twitter, it's like, you're trying to form this opinion. A lot of the times I find people who look like they're trying to find these opinions quick so that they can get like retweets and stuff like that.
Right.
And, you know, and then you find yourself going, well, what's this cause that everybody's so upset about? You know, I agree with it, but you know,
is agreeing with it going to respond with my audience?
yeah, exactly. You know, or is this person I'm looking at, like, did they do that for the 10K retweets, or, you know, or did they do that because they actually think that, you know? And
right.
I think a lot of times people confuse what people do for attention as well, on good and bad, with what people actually firmly believe. And, you know, it's like I don't know. It's just the internet's hard, because it's once it's written on there, it's written on there, and there's no frame of reference. There's no, you know, you kind of just read it out loud, and that's how it is.
Yeah.
And you can take from it however you want to take from it.
Context becomes irrelevant.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. It's irrelevant. It's past the point of gone, because we don't even ask, well, what's the context?
Right.
We just immediately say, nope, they wrote that. That's it. You know?
Shout out to Carrie from Deaf Heaven.
That
whole situation when that came up, you know,
which is just dumb, stupid things that shouldn't happen, in my opinion, on my end, on everybody's end. But it's just like, if you don't have that tool at your disposal to keep you overly triggered, like you said, then you won't basically use it.
Right.
And then it just, it, you know, it just, you kind of get better control over yourself.
Right.
Which is, you know, always a good thing.
Yeah. Well, and it's also been interesting because, you know, like in addition to, you know, getting off Twitter and getting off Facebook, I've also, you know, I've been balancing that with, you know, I moved home and I'm living with my parents until I start my program in the fall. And my parents, my mom in particular, are both really liberal, and I've been exposed to like only the liberal side of the news mm-hmm. of what's going on in the world, which, you know, like, okay, I'm pretty liberal myself. I would gravitate toward that, I guess, but just being off Twitter and, you know, removing myself from that particular echo chamber has made me like more acutely aware of other echo chambers in life. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so I'm watching this MSNBC and I'm like, okay, yeah, I get it. But like, what might the other side have to say about this? What might that third side that never really gets covered have to say about this? You know? And it's just, I don't know. I'm just, I don't want to call myself woke, because I hate like people that think they're woke, but it's just,
well, Dan, no, there's, listen, I don't know how far out here you want to get on this podcast, Dan, but
hey, we'll go wherever. Dude.
I mean, I would say there's a great awakening happening now. Right now, as we speak, and I don't mean in the stupid, you know, pastor on TV way of like, there's a great awakening happening inside you.
Right.
I mean that you'll just like you became aware of certain things around you that you just hadn't been aware of before. Like I know you just said that you yourself, you know, certain stimuli to your life, moving back home with your parents, you know, kind of getting sucked back into that kind of bubble of MSNBC and your parents reinforcing it. Just naturally your body's going, well, what other information is out there? Because I get this, you know, I'm smart enough to understand this. So what's going on? What's the other side? And I think that our generation specifically, is that generation that says, you know, yeah, we get the right and the left, but everything's not black and white. There's that other third party that doesn't get covered a lot, or there's this other idea that has nothing to do with the third party that doesn't get covered a lot. You know, right. I think that our generation is going to kind of incorporate in the, you know, like the genre thing musically. We're just going to incorporate in other aspects of ways to do things that maybe governments haven't done in the past, or that political paradigms haven't really had as a part of their classic, you know, ways, you know, mm-hmm. or traditions. And they view that as a bad thing, because that's what we're talking about is an old power structure that doesn't want to give up, right. You know? And like you said, you don't want to use the term woke, but I mean, our generation was the generation raised on social media. We know all these stupid memes that taught us things like, oh, you know, that the five, you know, all the major news networks are owned by, you know, certain corporations and all that stuff. And, mm-hmm. and we understand naturally how another realm of society works, right. That maybe an older generation doesn't. They say, oh, I get my news from Fox News or CNN or MSNBC. And you go, well, you know, so-and-so owns whatever. Disney owns MSNBC, and then your grandpa's like, well, I don't give a fuck. I like it. And you're like, but don't you see how that could affect what news they cover or this or that?
Right.
And you know, they just are like, yeah, I don't care. Why would they lie? It's like, or, you know, why wouldn't they tell me, you know, what was actually going on?
Yeah.
Or why wouldn't they not cover something that was actually happening or whatever? Mm-hmm. But I think we just live in a more, we just understand things a little bit on a different scale. It's not better or worse. It's just a different scale. Like you said, and I don't mean to get that far out there, but
no.
I mean, that awakening I think is happening where we're understanding that we need to do more than just kind of call people names on television and on the internet. And that doesn't necessarily mean we need to like go out and physically fight each other, but we need to understand life on a bigger scale.
Right. We need to hold ourselves accountable for the opinions that we're spewing out there. We need to
yeah
check ourselves.
Yeah, like my wife and I always have these conversations, and we, you know, you have freedom of speech, and you have, you know, you have freedom to say whatever you want, but there's also the freedom of you know, the someone's reaction to your speech,
right?
And you, in both sides have to be heard, and a lot of people are forgetting that kind of right now on both sides, and inside, even saying sides are stupid. I'm so sick, you know. Everybody's just so tired of all this, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Not really tired of all this, but ready to work. But not to pick a side, but just ready to work. You know what I mean? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's, we're urgent. I don't know. I just feel like the people that I interact with and the people that I talk to, we're not ready to, we don't care about picking a side. We're just ready to work to fix stuff. And,
yeah.
And that's kind of what we're not getting spoken to by the media or by anybody. They're not coming at us with information that we want.
Right. They're feeding their own stakeholders, shareholders, what
yeah,
have you.
Yeah.
Like that, yeah. That they're lining their bank accounts.
Exactly. And
do you think there's a way out? Or, I mean, you know, because you mentioned people, you know, just regular folks, people in our generation are more aware of this, but do you think we collectively have the power, or do you think those prevailing, I guess, those existing hierarchies are still too powerful?
I think the existing hierarchies are too, yeah, I mean, I think they are too powerful.
Basically, what I'm asking is, are you a nihilist or not? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, yeah, that would be the question, because, I mean, I'm a person who believes in a good conspiracy binge, and I'm unfortunately, through bouting years of depression, I've basically, like, just learned so many things that are from the internet that I don't even know are true or false. You know what I mean? So when you asked me the question, like, is there a way out, you know, can our generation do anything? I just think, well, think of all the levels of financial control that all these people have, but maybe they don't actually have it. And it's all just a bunch of bullshit. But either way, the people have the power because we have the population.
Mm-hmm.
And, if people understood that all of our consciousness is collective in a lot of ways, that basically we're as human beings are connected to each other, on levels that we probably don't even see or understand, or that, you know, matter or don't matter, but we just need to get together in some way and form. At least, I don't even know. You asked this question. It's so hard, man.
Yeah.
It's so hard.
We just went there, man. The Nine Circles podcast, going yeah. there.
well, first you'd have to change. I mean, if we're talking specifics, you'd have to change the way our currency is done, and you would have to change, you would have to basically change our president right now, and you would have to change a lot of our congressmen. I think what you see is basically what I hear a lot of scientists say is that certain things in science aren't going to happen until the old guard dies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we're young, we have more time
right.
than they do. And I think it might just be as smart as waiting it out, but getting our ducks in order as a group of some sort while we're waiting.
Right.
You know, instead of, like, we're the oversharing generation. We do something, we immediately share it on Instagram. We get that immediate gratification.
Right.
We need to start a movement, not we, but, you know, we need to get together and form something that we don't immediately share. You know, that we get the grassroots going and it hits at the right time when the old guard is they can't fight anymore.
Yeah.
And maybe none of the stuff I'm saying makes any sense, but
Well, I think the key is just at a certain level, we're going to have to realize that, you know, like we have our differences and, you know, in many cases, our differences are fine. They're great. They're, you know, I don't know. I personally wouldn't want to be a part of a society where everyone is exactly like me. That'd be weird. But yeah. I think the key is just going to be realizing that, you know, just as humans, yeah, we have our differences, but we're more alike than we are different. And regular people, you know, like when you get down to cities and communities and just local, just situations,
everyone has
a lot in common.
They did. And it's unfortunate because, you know, the first Catholic president was JFK, which was one of the first times religion was a really big deal in politics. And then people didn't really confuse politics with morals or connect the two until, I believe, the 80s, early 80s, I think. It was the 80s with mm-hmm. Reagan. Mm-hmm. They connected Christianity to Reagan, and then they basically got all the pro-life people to vote for Reagan, which put him over. And at that time, you know, that was a political move for them to use, but unfortunately it stuck. So now we have confused in our society politics and morals. They're one and the same on both sides.
Right.
So if you're a right winger, then morally someone can attack you and say, well, or, you know, whatever. And then if you're a left winger, someone can morally attack you and say, well, you're a baby killer or something. So you have two sides that can never morally, they kind of at their core hate each other in a lot of ways. You know, have mm-hmm. one side saying you're a Nazi and the other side saying, well, you're a baby killer. And it's just like,
you're a social justice warrior.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. You know, and then we get all these stupid terms for people to use and it becomes just kind of a normalized thing. And once it's normalized and people accept it as a thing, normal part of society that you cannot change and it's not going anywhere, and that's it. Mm-hmm. So now we're in the state of, we just accepted that we're this divided forever, and that's it. But like you said, we don't have to be, we're not divided as human beings. It's not like, it's like one side, you know, has three ears and the other side has two ears. You know, we're still all people. We still all go shop at Walmart, unfortunately, and we still all like do all the same stuff. So why are these parts of us holding us back from kind of getting together on the other parts?
Right.
And realizing, hey, you know, just because you believe this, maybe you have some good opinions on this other stuff that we could use. Cool. You know? Yeah. It doesn't necessarily mean that, like, that I guess is my whole point, is that I don't want people to, like, I don't want people to continue to just shut each other out, you know, once they've kind of realized that they don't agree on somebody with one specific thing.
Right.
You know, because you don't agree with everybody around you ever, you know, you don't agree with your roommate or your wife or your uncle or so-and-so all the time, but that does not make them a bad person or make you not like them, or, you know, do you know what I mean?
Right. We should afford just the average everyday person that we might happen to disagree with the same courtesies, the same respect and just dignity that we do, you know, the above average person, the folks closest to us when we disagree with them.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, basically we could, when you originally asked us, you can edit out basically my entire answer for, you know, what can we do? And just basically it all comes down to, if you treat people as you wish they treated you on a daily basis with every interaction that you come in contact with, if it's the convenience store cashier, bam, how you doing today, ma'am? Good to see you. You know what I mean? It's that type of stuff, because those are the interactions that actually occur between you checking how shitty life is on social media. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, or getting text messages for whatever bullshit you probably don't want to deal with at the time. So it's just like, that's what I try to do on a daily basis. Just like, you know what, just try and go out and like treat these, like just be respectful as a human being to other human beings. Because after working in retail and working in the service industry, and as you know, I'm sure from working in many jobs,
yeah,
it's like you see kind of how shitty people treat each other.
Absolutely.
And that to me is like, you know, that's part of the defining line in society is, I mean, I won't, unfortunately what I just said, I'm going to negate, because if I see one of my friends or someone treating a service staff like poorly or rudely, I don't think I can be friends with them.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and that to me is a defining, just kind of a defining line. So,
well, yeah. How do you,
I can contradict myself.
Well, yeah. I think the way you treat people that I guess society at large would deem to be lesser than you, for whatever reason, like the way you treat them is, I mean, that's a real measure of who you are as a person.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. And that, and no truer words have ever been spoken.
Yeah.
In my opinion. And I do believe that any sort of thing, any sort of wrong that you've committed will karmically come back to you. Especially in situations where you thought you were better than somebody, because of something, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think that's when karma really kicks in. That's like my frame of vision.
It's a nice thought to maintain. Although, you know, I have to be honest, you know, like I'm not perfect. I probably, especially like less so lately, but when I was up in New York, you know, I can't tell you how many times I would just, you know, just be dealing with stress and, you know, not handling it that well, I will admit.
Yeah.
I would be a dick to somebody, and
of course,
you know, and I hope there's karmic retribution, knowing full well that, yeah, I will probably get some comeuppance for some things at some point. But
yeah, no, I've done the same thing. Like, especially on tour, it's like you just get, you know, you're exhausted or whatever, or you're stressed out, you're away from home in any situation. And yeah, of course, you're just gonna, sometimes shit happens because you're human. But everybody would afford you that because you're a human being as well. And it's happened to them. You know, and
yeah,
everybody's been that person. Like I replied all to an email the other day, and sent it, and it wasn't like a shit talking, you know, email. But it was kind of like, what's going on over here? Like, these people have no idea type of email. But I accidentally replied all to it instead of replying just to the one person. So the people that I kind of was like, what's their deal? Why do they suck so bad? They got the email.
Oh,
And I was so bummed out at myself, you know what I mean? And they were just like, oh, cool, blah, blah, blah. Didn't even realize that I was rude in the email. And I totally worried about it for nothing. But when I told people about that, they're like, yeah, I've done that before. Yeah, I've done that before. So it's just like, no matter what you've done in life, there's people that have done it before. And I mean, that doesn't make it right. But like, I mean, it doesn't define you as a human being, you know,
right.
It doesn't make you who you are forever. A lot of people, you know, they kind of think that stuff does, and it definitely doesn't. You know, I think you can reform yourself into whatever you want, whatever is you, as long as you're being true to yourself, you know, which is kind of the theme of VatNet, like we said earlier, is to be true to it, you know?
Definitely. Definitely. Man. Dude, this got deep, and I love it. I love it. This is awesome.
Good. Good. I'm glad. Man.
Well, hey, like, circling back to, I guess, the music side of things, and
always,
and, you know, VatNet, and but also just music in general. Like, what have you been listening to lately? What's like really moved you so far in 2017 musically? Anything on your list?
I like the new Code Orange a lot.
Yes,
like what they do. I like I like that band because I never know what their new record's going to sound like.
Right.
And I think they take a lot of chances, which are great. And I fucking love what that guitar player does.
Yeah.
So much. Like, just absolutely incredible. And we saw them live, on the Taka, was it the Taka tour? It's either Taka or I think it was Taka. It doesn't matter. We saw them, and we played a venue where they were playing next door with Terror and Code Orange. Code Orange was unbelievable. Their bass player was like, that was the hardest dude I've ever seen. Like straight up, just like, I don't even know, just stomp. That dude stomped everywhere.
Oh man.
So I've been listening to that. I like the new Paul Bearer, obviously, for, you know, jaded reasons, because we tour with them.
Right.
But I think they're, I think that one's great. I think that, you know, those dudes as well, they don't listen to a ton of metal. And I think Joe's been listening to a lot of Toto and stuff lately. And I think that I hear it as a record that's kind of a heavy, heavy Toto record. Like my friend Eric said that as well. Eric said it, I think, first, but
right. I wouldn't have made that connection until hearing you say it, and now I'm like, oh, I can kind of
yeah. If you just kind of market, like, I feel like they should have just marketed it that way. Like, if you like Toto, you'll love Paul Bearer, because that's what it is. And you know, and I told Joe that, and he was like, yeah, that's, thank you very much. That's exactly where we drew from. It's like Toto 3 or 2. I can't remember which one. Yeah. But I've been listening to that a lot lately. Other than that, I honestly haven't been listening to a ton of music.
Really?
I haven't really been delving as much as I used to into new things. I've been listening to a lot of Dillinger Escape Plan a lot, and a lot of Metallica. Although I haven't really been listening to the new one a ton, but I do like it. I do like it.
I'm gonna like unpopular opinion alert right here. I honestly think Death Magnetic might be better than the new one.
You might be right. You might be right. But Death Magnetic's got some banging choruses on it, man. Like some just absolute, like All Nightmare Long is such a great song.
Like, Death Magnetic, I think I understood what they were going for. They were trying to get back to that classic sound, but it's one of those situations like we talked about earlier when it feels kind of forced. You can hear it. And I could definitely hear it on that record. But at the same time, like, I don't think Hardwired has as many songs that I would want to go back and re-listen to. You know?
I think that's what I was experiencing with it, is that there wasn't as many memorable moments.
Right.
Like, I couldn't tell you one part of it right now. I've listened to it probably 10 to 12 times. There isn't one part of it right now that I could be like, yeah, but that chorus and whatever, you know. But there are some parts when I listen to them, like, yeah, this part rips. But later on, I don't find myself wanting to throw it back on.
Right.
Which is kind of weird, because Metallica is, I mean, I listened to only Metallica for like 4 years straight, like only Metallica. I didn't listen to anything else.
Uh-huh.
And like was like a super fan. So for me to not really get into a new record is kind of odd.
Yeah.
I just found that I think they're trying to be Baroness, and I don't know.
Interesting.
Like I hear a lot of Baroness in it, and I don't know. I think Baroness might have taken the place, in my opinion, of, you know, guitar harmony metal.
Yeah. I would have to plead ignorance there. I'd have to go back and listen to it to see if I can make that connection. I don't know, but I mean, hey, it's interesting. I had a talk with a buddy of mine about this. Actually, I was on the other podcast on First, Last, and Always. We were talking. He had been to see Metallica, and
best show on earth.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. Yeah. But we were talking. It's you know, like the, you know, disinterest. I guess relative disinterest in their newer stuff. We were talking about this with Metallica, with Opeth, like other bands like that, where folks are kind of, you know, like, oh, what are they even doing anymore? That doesn't change the fact that their old stuff is out there and is still amazing. And
no way. Exactly.
You know, like Opeth, you don't like Heritage or Pale Communion or Sorceress. You can go back to like the literally 9 unimpeachable records that they put out before those. Like, you yeah, don't like
exactly.
You don't like Death Magnetic or Hardwired or Self-Destruct. You can go back to the first four, and I would say the first five. I like the Black Album. I'm not ashamed of it. But yeah, you know, it's just like I feel like there's this expectation when, you know, like legends put out these albums. There are almost these expectations when there really don't need to be. You know, they don't owe us anything.
No, they don't owe us shit. And that's the thing that I like about Metallica is they've always done that. Like, you knew on Load that they weren't going to continue on with what they had been doing. I mean, I think you knew even earlier with Black Album, and Justice was even a step away. But I like bands like that that say we don't care what you think, to be honest with you. I think that's cool. It just looks so cool. But the other side of it is, we don't care about your new music, though. You know, like, I'm a big Springsteen fan. I love Bruce Springsteen. And sure. I, again, listen to every new record he comes out with. On those days where I'm like, you know what, I'm driving, I need to listen to some Springsteen. I'm not putting on The Promise. Like, it's, you know, it's Born to Run or Live at Hammersmith 75. Like, you know, and Bruce knows that. Like, you know, I kind of shout a message out telepathically to Bruce, and I say, like, you know, hey, Bruce, thanks for the new stuff, but I'm going old today, and it's fine, you know. Yeah. But
he responds like in High Fidelity. You can
He just comes in and he's like, it's
hey,
okay,
hey, Chris.
Yeah, here's that E chord you've been working on.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is, like, you know, people just, they need to accept that artists are artists and they want to do what they want to do, and that you don't go through what they go through, no matter how great or awful you think their life is. And they need to do what they need to do. And if Metallica needs to write a country song like Mama said, they need to write a country song like Mama said, and that's it.
that's the kind of thing I've been realizing, you know, like reading reviews of Mastodon, their new one just came out. And you know, I've gone into it like just so neutral, because it's like, oh, you know what? There aren't any ulterior motives here. I don't think Mastodon is selling out. I think they're just writing in the style that moves them. And if you don't like it, fine. Go back and listen to Remission again. Go back and listen to Leviathan again. You know, like,
it's
not a big deal, but I don't question their integrity. I don't question the fact that they're making exactly the kind of music they want to make in that moment, you know?
No, and Mastodon's a great example as well. I think they get better with every record, in my opinion. I like Mastodon when they write pop metal a lot. Like, I think it's great because I think they take all of the musicality they know and apply it to pop music. Or at least not pop music, just more traditional song structures, great singing, good harmonies. And, you know, it's like, if you can do it, why not do it?
Yeah.
Why just hold yourself back to ripping the songs on Remission over and over again? But that's how that to me is funny, because all these same dudes look at, you know, bands like Genesis or those 70s bands that ended up kind of becoming more pop in the 80s. It's like
Rush.
All those 70s, yeah, like Rush, you know, like Rush shreds. All of them can shred.
Yeah.
You know they can shred.
Absolutely.
At some point they go, yeah, we can shred. You all get it. But if you listen to Subdivisions by Rush, it's just a pretty simple song, synth driven, but there's so much going on, so much production wise going on, so much added in that you can still hear them shredding. They're just shredding in a different way.
Yeah.
And you know, that's what I think we're experiencing now. And people aren't really making that connection, unfortunately.
It's one of those things, like, the power of hindsight is gonna make that all easier to realize. Like years from now, we're gonna go back and realize, like, oh wow, what Mastodon did from Crack the Sky through, you know, through Emperor of Sand, or really, you know, like, I know some people jump ship on Blood Mountain, from Blood Mountain through Emperor of Sand. Like, that's, you know, people are gonna realize, like, there's some really cool shit that came out of those albums.
Oh, dude, and Brent's guitar solos. I mean, that dude. Such an underrated guitar player, as far as just a, like, the stuff he comes up with. And, like, you know, he gets he gets like put on lists of best guitar players ever and gets Guitar World coverage and all that other stuff. But like, they don't get the respect that they, I think, deserve as a whole, as musicians, just for at least for what they're doing.
Right.
I mean, there's no one on, there's not a lot of bands at their level.
Right.
I mean, there's like the Metallica level, and then there's kind of the Mastodon kind of Gojira level, you know? And there's other bands on that level, but there's not many, and there's none that sound like fucking Mastodon. There's none of them.
Right. I mean, I'm thinking like, you know, just in terms of exposure, like just not even like potential crossover appeal, you know, like attention from the mainstream, stuff like that. I mean, like maybe Lamb of God, but not even.
Yeah, maybe.
But I think
Mastodon even has more radio appeal than them.
Right. I was going to say, I think Lamb of God is more abrasive than.
Yeah.
In their own way, in their groove. Kind of I think it's Randy's vocals. Like, Randy's vocals are never going to be
they're not gonna,
you're never going to hear them on the radio.
No, unfortunately not. But I respect Mastodon for taking the chance with their band, because mm-hmm. you know, it's like they could have just done the same thing over and over again and maybe done it really well and maybe sold the same amount of records or whatever they, you know, want out of it. But you know, they kind of just kept being themselves in a lot of ways. And I think that's the mark of a lasting artist more so. Like you said, I think they'll be like, history will remember them a bit more. Whereas a lot of people will be looking back going, well, what the hell? We were there. They sucked. Like my mother-in-law isn't a Fleetwood Mac fan, and I can't fathom that to save my life. You know, like I love Fleetwood Mac, and she's like, yeah, but when it came out, it was just pop music.
Right.
And I'm like, what, you know, but that's the, you know, that, like you said earlier, that the frame of reference, applies to time too. Mm-hmm. And someone's frame of reference on exposing for that first exposure to a band is huge.
Definitely.
You know, she views Fleetwood Mac still to this day as pop music.
Yeah.
And I love my mother-in-law. She's awesome. One of the best women ever, and keeps me afloat. So I don't want her to think I'm.
It's a good thing you clarified that, because I know the internet would think, oh God, Chris Alfieri is shitting on his mother-in-law now, just like he was shitting on metal earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. There it is. No, I love her. Bridget Paris, I love you. You're a great mother-in-law. And she's a huge VatNet supporter. She always has her VatNet hoodie on.
Awesome.
Comes to every local show. So if you're in the Boston area, you'll see her.
Oh, that's great.
Say hello.
Alrighty. Well, hey, I know you're a busy guy. I got to get rolling soon. I have a test. I have an anatomy test on Thursday, so I have to prep for that. But we'll wrap up. I mean, any final thoughts on VatNet, on the new album, on 2017 life? Anything you wanna share for this last little tidbit?
Well, there's a new VatNet record coming out by the end of this year. Other than that, just be nice to everybody you come in contact, you know, with. Be nice to them, and basically everything will start rolling from there, I think, for every individual person.
Amen, brother. Amen. Well, Chris, dude, thank you so much for your time tonight. This was great. It was awesome catching up with you. Hopefully catch you guys on tour sometime soon, or, you know, just wherever. I'm jonesing for more VatNet, so I can't wait to hear it.
Awesome, man. Thank you.
Alrighty, we'll catch you soon.
All right, bye.
Bye. So there you have it, VatNet doing stuff. New album out this year. Do not sleep on it. I want to send a huge thank you out again to Chris Alfieri. Chris, thank you so much for coming on the pod. And thanks to Casey and Seamus as well for always being good dudes. And we're rooting for you guys here at Nine Circles. We're super stoked to hear this thing. Whenever it may grace our ear holes. So we're gonna be keeping an eye out for that. But thank you guys so much. And Chris especially, dude. An hour of your time. This was a great conversation. Reminder for folks out there, this is only going going to be available here on the website. I have not reactivated the podcast feed. We are not putting this out over iTunes, Google Play, any of those, because I don't know how many more of these we're going to be doing, truth be told. I certainly like doing them, but neither Corey nor myself can commit to doing them on a regular basis anymore. So they're generally just going to be one-offs, I think, from here on out. So we may do more, but if and when we do, they are only going to be here on the website, www.ninecircles.co. Check that out. Be sure to keep an eye out. Reminder, as always, we are on Facebook, Nine Circles blog, Twitter @_9circles, and Instagram @_9circles. And of course, if you want to reach us by email, ninecirclesblog@gmail.com. Thanks again to Chris Alfieri. Thank you to the Nine Circles folks for giving us this outlet and letting us run this conversation here. This was originally going to be a conversation on my other podcast, but then, you know, given the focal shift, I guess we decided it'd be more appropriate for the Nine Circles audience. And you know, thank you to Josh and Corey for allowing it. Thank you to you all for listening. I hope you had as much fun hearing it as I did discussing it with Chris. And yeah, hopefully we'll see you back soon for more of these. But in the meantime, visit www.ninecircles.co for more metal coverage, and we will talk to you soon.